So as I told you yesterday, in the temples, in the mosques, in the churches, there are symbols of light are found out there. Which is better? They are symbols, don't it? Show the such like models, the such like light and sound of God is reverberating within you. And one asks, who is the better? And he is better of the two, of all these, in whom that light is effulgent, is radiating. That is best of all. So these outer things you have found just for teaching the people that such like sound is there, such like light is within you, you are the two temples of God. We have respect for outer temples and places of worship as it is meant to direct people to the true temple of God which you are carrying. So long as the practical people were there, they gave a demonstration of that. They saw their own body was the true temple of God with the grace of the Guru. So he is best of all. Now he says, Shankara, the most learned man, came out after the true worship of man, incarnation. And Narad, who is the Bhakti Yoga, head of the Bhakti Yoga, like Ramakrishna Paramahansa, he took to the Bhakti Yoga. And last of all, he saw, he first worshipped God in the symbol of Mother. Mother enveloped me all around, right, left, up, down. There was no place where Mother was not. He came to his Guru. He said, look here, I cannot rise into quantity, unity of God. He took something, whatever was lying, put him here. Put your attention here. Rise above. Then he had risen into oneness of God. So I tell you, the most learned and the most devoted God, I mean Bhakti Yoga, and also of all other yogas, they bear testimony, they hanker to come to the feet of somebody who is God made flesh. One is, fire is burning somewhere, to sit by that. And one is learning how to burn the fire by rubbing. So that is why Maulana Rum gave out, you can find to sit at the feet of a master, not the so-called masters, excuse me, for 1 hour, that will give you an effect, a benefit you would not be able to derive by sitting 100 years in the outer palace. So, the Guru Nanak Das say, why we want to set the feet of a master like that and die at his feet? Because even the most learned people, the most bhakti yoga heads, and others all prayed for the, what is presence, or the guidance, or the company of those who were made flesh, direct mouthpieces of God. He says, further it is, such like people, those of world made flesh, wherever they laid their feet on, where they resided, they became the places of pilgrimages. Christ lived in Jerusalem. That is the place of pilgrimage for all Christians. Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad, was at Mecca. That is the place of pilgrimage of all the Muslims all over the world. Buddha was awakened. In India there is a place there that is called, that place is a place of pilgrimage for all Buddhists. Guru Nanak born somewhere which are called now as Nankana Sahib. He sat on the feet of some tree which became sweet part of it, the fruit became sweet, then called as by that place where he said. So one word made flesh sat in so many places, all places became the what the places of worship. Which is better of all? Kabir puts question, O God, have a doubt in me, tell me, clear that out. Is it the world made better or the places of pilgrimage? You will say, you will have to say, the world made flesh, wherever it sits, is better of all these places of worship. Pilgrimages, because it is due to him that place of pilgrimage came to be. So that is why Guru Ram Das say, I pray, O God, let me sit at the feet of you, of such a world made flesh, and die at his feet. Then he says, what to do? Just seek, if you hear somebody like that, go and sit at his feet. Don't think of your high position, or your wealth, or your ego. You just hear somebody like that, go and sit at his feet. See for yourself what you want. Don't go by the propaganda. Simply go and see. These are the things which sometimes stand in our way. You know, there is one saint, Ravidas. Mirabai, a saint, came to his feet and was blessed, was put on the way. The king of the time was called by name Pipa. He heard about it, that Ravidas, who was by profession a cobbler, is a great saint here. So many people have gathered together at his feet and derived benefit. He also wanted to go to his feet, but he considered, I am a king. How can I go to the feet of a cobbler? Worldly position, sometimes worldly wealth, sometimes high education, stands our way. Oh, I know so much, I have so much, why should I go? One day he could not remain, you see. At the evening time, here you see, at the evening time many people go around. In old days, people used to go to the places of worship, sit there, temple, or at home. He ran up and go to the house, went to the house where Ravidas saint was living. He says, Master, I have come. He says, all right, he has not thought of his position and wealth and anything. He has come, all right, I will give him such a thing he will remember forever. You see, he was just washing his skin. He was a cobbler. And the king was afraid, oh my lord, what will happen if I'm asked to just drink that water which is washing up his skin? You see, the predominantly, presence of a great master, man forgets everything. He could not refuse. He simply took the water, let it go to the shirt, ran back, oh God, I am saved. I was otherwise spoiled. When he came home, he called for the washerman, you can wash this cloth. That was some stain of his skin, water of his skin, washing. So the daughter of he asked his daughter to just with the tongue clear it off, wash it, and then the shirt was washed. In that there was attention, you see, mind that. Attention works wonders. What is initiation? It's a literal attention given to, which gives you a boost to rise above body consciousness. Outward expression of the soul is called attention. When attention is diverted, rabbited at one place, that was wonder. So, washerman's daughter became to be known as a saint. People began to gather together at her feet. King also came to know about it, that the daughter of my washerman is a saint, people are coming, let me go to and visit him. He is not a cobbler, she is not a cobbler, you see. Went over there. When he reached there, the daughter of the washerman stood up with his hands, folded. And the Pipa King said, told him, look your daughter. I have come to see you as a saint, not as a daughter. You should not have stood. She said, also I have not stood that because you are a king. I am only standing in reverence because whatever I have got, it is through your favor. And she explained what it was, that I just washed the stain of the on the shirt which you gave us with my tongue. Then he repented and came back. Now the master, the people say, if you hear of such a master, who will not wish to go to such a master? But such masters have been few in the past. Even now they are few, but they are not, world is not without them. There is food for the hungry and water for the thirsty. Demand and supply goes on as a law. If a child was born 5,000 years back, 500 years back, or now, does not nature make arrangements for world in the mother before he is born? Don't you think those who will come in future, they will refuse that consideration? So, masters do live. They never say we are gods. They simply say we are your brothers. We are all brothers and sisters of God. Of course, they say the grace of God, something is working, then all credit goes to him. So, Guru Ram Das gives, wherever you hear such like master, you go to his feet. Don't think of the worldly position. Don't think of your high position. Don't think of the learning that you have got. To go is better, you see. Saint Augustine said, what is the way back to God? He said, first humility, second humility, and third humility. You are humble only when you try to go to somebody. Even if you go there, you are not humble, then whatever tumbler, you see, whatever glass you put under a tumbler of water, only that will be filled. If it is placed above the tumbler, then what you know that's all right. Keep it to you. Just hear what he says. He might be saying something else. And you understand that, follow it. When you have that thing manifest in you, become humble, truly humble. Any fruit, let a tree, the branch of which laden with fruit, that bends down to the ground. So humility comes up only then. Now the point is, what does he give such a man? We have business actually. Why should you go to such a person? He says, his first work is give a boost to you to rise up above body consciousness. He gives you a rebirth into the beyond. You know what Christ gave out? Except you be born in you, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. And Nicodemus, who was a very learned Jew, had there, he came up, Lord, how can, we are old ones, how can you re-enter the womb of the mother and be reborn? He said, you are a learned man, everybody respect you. Don't you know the flesh is born of the flesh and spirit of the spirit? Then he said, you must be reborn. This rebirth is called. In Amaji, he is called twice born. You see, this is what they give. That's only had at the feet of master. Guru Nanak was asked, when did you escape the wheel of life and death, coming and going? He said, by having a rebirth at the feet of my master. When you become conscious co-worker of divine plan, your ego is gone. If you have not become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, then you are the doer. Whatever you sow, you will have to reap that. Good action will give you good results, bad. The wheel of coming and going will go on. So this is the first thing who raises you from the depth of the poisons of the outgoing faculties above all that, bring you up, and open your inner eye to see the light of God. Morarum, refer to it as we are all in the prison house of the body. We have forgotten ourselves, how to come out of the body. He says, you break the roof, open the hole into the roof and go out. So in man body, you see, so long as you are working at the level of the outer faculties, all impressions are coming within you. If you stop all that, draw your attention from all outside, the outgoing faculty won't work. And just collect all your attention at the feet of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes, then that inner eye will open, single eye, you will see the light of God, you see the voice of God, music of the spheres, which will lead you where? That will lead you where? From where that emanated. The God said, I am one and wish to be many. There was vibration. And vibration results in two things, light and sound. So this is direct way back to God. So, what is done? You see, when you meet a master, he gives you how to rise above body consciousness, how to become conscious co-worker of divine plan, that power is working, which is not you. Then you lose your ego, that Lord of reckoning, of justice, which just gives this, what is it, decisions according to our actions, then while a doer. But those who become conscious co-worker of divine plan, they have not to attend that court of law. So this is, while all your records back are present, when there is nobody to bear the reactions of the past, no ego is left, no doer is left, then who will bear that? So all are watchers. So you are not to attend the court of reckoning after your death. As you sow, so shall you reap. You escape that beat. Because you become conscious, you are no more dual of the day thing. So, such like people, you say, what to do? When you want permanent peace and permanent jaya, then there is one thing only. Don't, he said, delay a minute. Seek the feet of somebody who is master in that sense. And so when such master come, what they do? They all right, here's the way back to God, come up, God will lead you there. He has sent me to carry you out there. He does not say I am God, he says I am messenger. Just, you see, there are two kinds of masters who come into the world. Electricity is the same. Somewhere it burns, fire, somewhere it gives you ice, clean. There are two different workings of that power, which is called. One is called incarnations of God, the other come of the negative power, you might say, of called time, and the other is incarnations of God. So saints also come to the world, their mission is different. And others also come, their mission is to punish the wicked, to uphold the righteous, and let the world going. Whereas those who come to take back soul back home, that is to depopulate the world, you see, and bring people home. It is something, I may give you an example. There is a prison house. One man goes there, he takes pity on them, they don't get good food, he allows some money. And the prisoners begin to have good food after that. Another man goes there, he sees they've got no clothes. he sanctions some amount, and the prisoner begins to have good clothes. A third man goes over there, he says they have got no ventilated buildings to live in. He sanctions some allotment, made some money, and they begin to have good ventilated house. All three people went over there, their sympathy was for the prisoners. They began to have good food, good clothing, and good buildings to live in. Another man went up. He had the key of the door of the prison. He opened the door. All right, go out, each one. Who had more sympathy for those men? So saints are like that. They come to take you back home. So whenever you come under the custody of such a personality, call by any name you like now, he's a man born like us, of course. But the difference is, he has controlled all his outgoing faculties, he takes work from them as he desires, and we are led away by the outgoing faculties. He rises, he wants his body is working in the world, but his soul is in tune with God, is the mouthpiece of God. He appears to very much, I've engaged in worldly affairs, but whenever he wants, he rises above body consciousness and transcendence to be joined. So he can work both ways, here and there. To have such a master, living master, is a great blessing. So such like people come up, then the question comes, what is in their hands with which they do all these things? They are word made flesh, mind that. That word has God, as you told, as I submitted to you, to a special light and sound. They come, that's already within us, but our soul is just identified with the world outside. We withdraw all our attention from outside and give it something to start with, some capital to start with. It's not simply said, go on doing it, you'll have it. No. A bird in hand is better than two in the bush. He gives you demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness. Give you some capital to start with of light and sound by regular practice. They do own, you see, at times Guru Amar Das says, I was sometime like you working the world under the control of outgoing faculties, but now I have risen above with the grace of God, working through my Guru. So every saint has its past and every sinner's future. So there is hope for everybody. Those who got man body, they have got the heredity right, as I told you, to know God. So in their hand, what nectar they have got, what medicine they have got, by which they raise our soul from all outward enjoyment, gives a higher bliss within, that it will bring you in contact with the world within you. Thy world is lamp unto my feet. Take heed that the light which in you is not darkness. You follow? With that thing, they do like that. So, when the master come, you know when Christ sent his disciples to preach outside, he said, what you heard in the ear, tell them from the outside. These things are now being given out openly as platform. This is the basic teaching of all masters who came, whether in the East or the West. Now we need somebody. If we can rise up our own selves, well and good, what more is wanted? But if we cannot, if somebody comes there, then God sends him. Your prayer is true. God makes some arrangement to bring us in contact with somewhere where he can have this facility of rising to demonstration of rising above body consciousness, opening inner eye. So they come and proclaim, here's the way. God wants each one of you to come back to his home. And that thing which leads you to your true home is within you already, controlling you in the body. You are simply to withdraw your attention from outside and give you contact with that, which will lead to where, from where it emanates, where should it go. So all outer religions, the labels of which we are carrying, they have these very basic teachings in their scriptures. For want of practical people, we have forgotten. This is what I am putting before you, it is no new thing. It is already given in the books, in the scriptures. I have written one book, Naam or Word, from all scriptures.
The heaven and
the social body now exist in the world. They simply touch the true living and higher consciousness. Is what social body, the labels of which you are carrying, remain there first step. Have true living and somebody there, if you can have your own self contact, that power which is within you, when will you know about it? When your attention is drawn from all outside and from the body below, then your inner eye or single eye will open, you see it in them. If you can do of your own self well and good, do it. If not, we cannot do it generally, because we are already identified with the outgoing faculties, intellect, body, the world. They have forgotten ourselves and all practices. What we use for meeting God relate to the outgoing faculties, mind or intellect. How can we rise above it? So someone is needed to raise you up, give you a demonstration of it, give you something, some capital to start with, of the light and sound within you, and then dwell further. There the ABC starts. That's not the end all, the be all. We have got many mentions here. House of our Father. Macrocosm in the microcosm. This is what we gather from the Masters, you see. And this is what is meant by the word Master or Guru in the terminology of the sense, not in the sense as we use generally. We have respect for all those at whose feet we have learnt all these subjects which relate to the outgoing faculties or intellect. But we do need somebody who has access into the vijayam, who can give us a demonstration of that how to rise above body consciousness, and we bear testimony what the Master says, really that is so. The company of such masters is called the true satsang. Not those of intellectuals, but those who have been to the beyond and gives us something of the beyond. In his company we will truly learn what the scriptures say, because they have seen the words of those masters who saw and then gave out, which form part of our scriptures. If you want true interpretation of those, we need somebody who has seen, has been there. So yesterday morning you see I gave you what is meditation. Last night I gave you what is called really spirituality. It is not bearing the outer forms and rules of the labels of the religion. It is something to know how to know yourself and to know the old self, which is controlling us in the body by self-analysis, and enable you to transcendently beyond and traverse there. That needs somebody to guide you. Called Vali name Vidali. Today I have given you see, what you will learn at their feet, what is really called a master or a guru, and we confound him with the outer forms of the world. Again, I will submit, we have respect for all these at whose feet we have learned something. But this all thing gives you science, of the knowledge of the world, which is exotic. And this is where all philosophies and their religion start. Tomorrow, when God wills, I give you some insight in the world, what is world. You see? And the gleaning is given in all scriptures of that, reference is given there. And further, this body is the true temple of God, where it is possible to rise above body conscious and traverse into the beyond. What our scriptures say about it, about them, that will form the subject of tomorrow and day after, God willing. Thank you for your patient hearing. What I have come to know, I have come for you. It is for you to, for calm consultation, how it appears to you.
Good morning, and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The talk you just heard was the last half of a talk called Man, Know Thyself, and it was recorded on October the 9th, 1972, in New York. Our reader this morning is Ed Handley. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you. I'm going to be reading today from a circular that may not have gone into general distribution. It's very early. It does not have a date or a number on it. The title of the circular is Karmas, Suffering, a Time of Trials. Whatever good or bad happens to you, through whatever person or object, directly proceeds from our loving Father. All persons and objects are but tools in his hand. If an evil befalls you, think of it as his greatest mercy. We have to suffer for our past actions, sooner or later. Our Master, by taking us through these sufferings speedily, and by hastening the approach of those which were to come later, intends to relieve us of our burden earlier. And by this earlier payment of debt, because debt it is, the amount of the suffering is very much lessened. We may have to pay one ton of karma first, but instead, by the grace of the Master, we are released and only pay 1 pound. So never be disheartened if you are made to pay some severe debt. It is all for your good. Suppose a man ill-treats you without any fault on your part. You should see in this ill-treatment the hand of the Master working. He wants to find out and to make known to you whether or not your self-reverence has died out and how deep has meekness and love taken root in you. Again, suppose a man loses his relative. It is to test the decrease in love of earthly relatives. Father wants to loosen these heavy chains which bind us down to this earth. More love towards earthly relatives means less with the Master. So all events which appear to be misfortune are not really so. They come to chasten us and to add to our power or resistance and leave us better in the end. Be always resigned to his will. What Father does, he does for the best. In this world, those persons who are engaged in upward march have constantly to face the inroads of two powerful enemies, the mind and matter. They try to put many obstacles in our way. If an untoward event happens, we need not be disheartened. Rather, we should rise with redoubled love, and final victory is ours. Desire has abased the soul. When it desires something and fails to find the object of its desire, it feels pain. Therefore, abandon your desires even now and accustom yourself to be resigned to the will of the Father. Your fall from the window, my daughter, you truly say. There is nothing accidental here. Every misery or trouble that comes to us is the result of our own past actions. The sooner our debts to Kal Purush are paid off, the better for us. Whatever befalls us is regulated by the direct orders of our Guru, and we should take it as such, as a blessing unexpected. Such obstructions are sure to come in the way of a satsangi. But we should not be disheartened by these acts of the Kal Purush. Rather, during such intervals, we should attend to bhajan with double zeal. Master is always with you, and watching you, and helping you in every action. Go on increasing love and faith in his feet by regularly attending to exercises. He himself will look after our worldly affairs. A Master Saint's mission is to distribute heaven's treasure of mercy with the laws of sympathy and mercy. Thus all troubles of devoted disciples are softened to a bearable minimum degree. Sometimes intensity of bodily and mental trouble is increased to shorten the duration of the suffering. With others, intensity is decreased and duration is prolonged. But this is not all. Sufferings, troubles, and diseases of physical body are the interest we accrue from pleasures. Bodily troubles are to be borne on the body. The Master, as Word personified and polarized God-man, knows all his disciples, whether at a distance or near at hand. He even takes the burden of karma of his devoted disciples on his own shoulders to bear himself. This happens in very rare cases as Master thinks fit. Besides, no disciple would like to adopt this course that the Holy Master should suffer for his wrongs. The disciple should be well conversant with the laws of prayer in this world. He should pray to his Master Saint and help is sure to come to relieve or soften the situation and to minimize the results of sin. Your question about the necessity of suffering in the economy of creation is one of those problems which cannot be satisfactorily understood so long as the soul is on this low plane. But so much can be said that spirit entities are merely forced into this condition at the time of creation. The object of the Creator was that they, too, should attain full consciousness and join the region of pure bliss. Therefore, in order to develop their consciousness and to create in them a longing to reach the region of pure spirit, it was necessary to subject them to a course of suffering. Without that, they would not have cared to make their condition better. The soul that is satisfied in this world does not feel the necessity of joining its Creator. The truth of this explanation becomes established as the soul travels upwards. The individual's desire are mostly the outcome of past karma. Feeble and passing desires arise in thought and are stilted after mental satisfaction. There are other desires which are more persistent. They have to be satisfied, some even on the physical plane. So whatever happens is for the ultimate good, although at times it appears antagonistic to our calculation. We are ignorant of our past karmas, but Master knows. So the whole thing reduces to this, that we do what we have been asked to do by the Master, spiritual exercises, and doing our worldly things with our ordinary wisdom and never caring for the result. Do your duty and expect nothing. Leave that to the Master. Take for granted that all that has happened, is happening, or will happen, is with His will. So in whatever circumstances we find ourselves, we should remain contented. If He sends us misery, we should accept it with pleasure. And if He keeps us happy, we should take it as His children. So do not consider that your life is not a bed or roses. Take it as His gift and be happy with it. Misery is a blessing in disguise, says Shakespeare. Misery is a medicine and pleasure is a disease. For in pleasure, the mind dominates and keeps us away from the past. You say you are thirsty for knowledge. Knowledge is in the sound current. It is within you. You speak of your husband's illness and loss of position. Naturally, you feel very much disturbed and disheartened. Rest assured that before you are born here, the arrangement of your livelihood was made. The pains and pleasures and the general run of life were then determined. This was not by any haphazard process, but by a careful, regulated system known as Rarinikan. Nothing happens here of its own accord. The pains and pleasures of life are the results of our own actions. He who is born, no matter in what form, and that means all forms, cannot help doing actions. And all actions must have reactions. Every action is indelibly written in our mind. The memory is poor and the whole record is forgotten. But it does not mean that there is no record. Main events of the life are the results of our past actions. And this is the debt that stands against us. And like a debtor, we should be happy when the debt is being paid off. This debt has to be paid. We incurred it at one time as cheerfully as some people are doing now. It seems painful now to pay, but we were not cautious when we incurred it. The only course open now is to reconcile ourselves with what is happening, for happen it must. And undergo it, we must. Then why not do so without opposition? It is difficult to be happy in calamity, but you will find much change if you look at it from the viewpoint just stated. Nanak, a great saint, has said, misery is medicine and pleasure is disease, because in pleasure mind scatters, and in adversity or misery it contracts. The teachings of the saints is to subordinate and merge the individual will in his will. The saints in the world differ here. The world pays the debt and weeps or laughs, while the saints neither weep nor laugh, but are unaffected by the pains or pleasures of this life. The question arises, what supports the saints in this attitude? The answer is that while they have bodies like us and live under the same external circumstances in which we live, they are not attached to the bodies as we are. They can withdraw the attention from the body at will, not only from the material body, but also from the astral and causal body. When the attention is withdrawn, and in proportion to its withdrawal, then the influence of pain and pleasure is not felt, for the mind that was to feel attention is not there for the time being. They withdraw the attention and live in the sound current. The current is their life. They teach the same to us and not only wish it, but make him a saint who follows them. Hence, with patience, perseverance, and faith, try to rise up. First to the eye focus by repetition of names, and then catch the sound current there and reach your nam. Do not lose heart, but trust in the Master. Subordinate your will to His. The game of life seldom runs smoothly. When everything seems going well, something comes in to disturb it. The Kal interferes. But if the faith is strong, and one keeps one with the current, the times pass on well. The wind is come and gone. The pains and pleasures of life come and go, and mind learns by experience. Let Mrs. Blank alone. Let her gain by experience. When the time of very favorable karma comes, only then the mind feels inclined, to go within. And only then the love for the Master and the sound current spring up, and he spends some time in devotion. On the other hand, when the disturbing karma intervenes, mind feels dry and indifferent, and runs away from satsang and sinks back in the quagmire of the world. It takes time to remove the layers of karmic dirt deposited through innumerable births. Krishna of the Bhagavad Gita says, "Freedom from karma is attained after a long succession of lives spent rightly on the path." Life is a combination of pains and pleasures. If the happy days are gone, the days of adversity will also go in their turn. Make room for the happy times again. The karmic cycle must work. The arrow that has left the bow must find its mark. The man should put up with it as best he can, for the karma is unchangeable. Two devotees of spirituality went to pay respects to a lady well advanced in this line. The talk turned on the visitation of good and bad days. The lady asked them to state the attitude a person should have under these varying circumstances. One of them replied, "Good and bad should be borne with patience." The lady replied that there was pride in the attitude. The second said one should take delight in both good and bad. The lady smelled pride here as well. They asked the lady to state the attitude, and she replied, "Soul should be so advanced that it feels no difference in good or bad. In adversity and disease, one gets an opportunity to test himself and his depth in his faith. In this world, you seldom come across a happy soul. Under the burden of ailments and troubles, mental and physical, every soul feels oppressed. When hard times come, the devotee should face them with patience and should derive strength from the sound current to bear them. Remembering that if good days have passed away, giving place to bad, the bad also in their time will be replaced by the good days again. A boat held to its moorings will see the floodwaters pass by, but detached from its moorings, it may not survive the flood. Current is our base, our mooring. Such soul attached to the current is safe. The span of life can neither be extended nor shortened, even by one single breath. Fate cannot be altered. Health and disease are connected with past karma and come and go as determined by the cycle of karma. Medicine does not cure the disease. Karma is at the root. When the karma has been gone through, the disease has run its course, and the medicine is effective. No medicine is effective as long as the disease has not run its course. But it is good to take medicine and disease, as advised by doctors. Medicine keeps the patient consoled. Friends do not unnecessarily trouble and press the patient, while others get no chance at all to call the patient a miser or a stupid person. Again, it is an opportunity for the paying up of old debts through the doctor's fees and apothecary's bills. Faith unsupported by direct evidence from within should not be put to very severe tests, for it is shaky. When the spirit has access within and is in communion with the master, then it receives support from within and has direct evidence of the coming, duration, and going of the disease. In such cases, even saints advise the use of medicine, for the patient may be getting evidence and support from within, but his relations or attendants, in whose charge he finds himself, may not be of his way of thinking. They will be constantly pressing him for medicine. So why not take a little dose and let things go smoothly? The karmic debt has to be paid. The power to pay this debt increases as we follow the current. As long as the attention is in the current, it is withdrawn from the body and mind. And as the debt is to be paid through suffering of the body or the mind, and through association with the current, both of them have been elevated, and they do not feel the suffering to the extent to which they would have felt otherwise. Not that they are dulled, but because the soul, the life-giving principle, is capable of detaching or withdrawing from their sphere. Again, if a devotee is doing his bit faithfully, he receives Master's help to a greater degree. Just as a benevolent person coming across a man carrying a heavy load would offer to share his load, so does the Master. A faithful devotee is taken care of by the Master as a child is taken care of by its mother. But look at the implicit faith of the child in the mother. The sound practice does not postpone the karma, but destroys it. This is from the circular Karma's Suffering, a Time of Trials. Thank you.
And thank you, Ed, for reading for us. We have a few more minutes left in this morning's satsang, and I will fill that by reading from the latest talk that came out November-December 2015, entitled The King of Our Hearts. And it was originally a talk given by Master in memory of his master, Baba Sawan Singh, September 2nd, 1963. It is really a great blessing to meet, I would say, a master man, or God in man, or man who is the mouthpiece of God. God resides in every heart. He is the controlling power, controlling all creation, and he is also controlling our souls in the body. We cannot run out of the body, even though it has 9 apertures, 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, etc. God speaks through those who have become in tune with him, you might say, or have become his mouthpiece. Though words appear to be coming through the gullet of a son of man, he is quite conscious. He sees that it is he who is speaking, and that it is being inspired by that higher power. He is not speaking at the level of the intellect, but what is said comes of itself. You will find that those thoughts which come of themselves are always perfect. The very same God is within us too, but the soul of a living master, at whose pole God is speaking, has arisen from the bondage of mind and matter. He sees the controlling power within himself. Generally, we find that people who say they have met God have done so at the level of feelings. Feelings are of our own make. Sometimes out of feelings we rise into certain emotions. And sometimes intellectually we come to some conclusion as a matter of inference. Truly speaking, we have not seen him, if we take him to be at the level of our own self. All these 3, feelings, emotions, and inferences, are subject to error. Seeing is above all. Soul is the spirit of God. It is spirit in man, environed by mind and matter. Those who have risen above the body by self-analysis and have become conscious co-workers of God know that it is he who is controlling us all. To meet such a personality as the Son of Man is a great blessing. He appears to be a man like all other men. He has the same 2 eyes and 2 hands, the same outer construction. But our souls are embedded in the mind and outgoing faculties, and we are so much identified with them that we have forgotten ourselves. Unless we rise above senses or above body consciousness, unless we are reborn into the beyond, we cannot become conscious co-workers of the divine plan. Whenever such like people come to the world, they are conscious. They never say, "I am saying this or that." They say, "It is the Father in me who is working." Do you see? The same power is within us, but we are not conscious of it. Because, as I told you, our souls are under the control of mind, and mind is under the control of the outgoing faculties, and we have become so identified with them that we have forgotten ourselves. Whenever such masters come, what is their job? He is man among men. Do you see? He is a son of man, but he is something more. He is in tune with God, and in his company, other souls which are tied down to the mind, outgoing faculties, or the senses, are raised above them. He opens the inner eye to see God in action or in expression, which is called Word. The Bible says, "The Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us." To meet such a master while living on earth is a great blessing, because with a little thought of his, he is competent to raise our souls above the senses, something that we cannot attain by years of penances. So, seeing is above all. Truly speaking, theists are those who have seen God. The Son knows the Father and others to whom the Son reveals him. They are true theists. All others, truly speaking, have not yet become theists. They have their own feelings and emotions and have drawn inferences to come to some conclusion, but they have not yet seen. We believe in God just as we have read about him in scriptures. Scriptures speak of the experiences that the masters had in their lives, in their contact with God. They are a fine record of all these experiences. By reading them, an interest is created in us to have the same experience within our own selves. So, scriptures are there to create an interest within us. But unless we can have the same experience in our own selves, we cannot be truly convinced. Therefore, whenever the masters come, they say, "Don't believe what the scriptures or what anyone else says. You can take them as experimental measures, but unless you see for your own self, at least to some extent, the same experiences that they speak of, you cannot be fully convinced." To meet with such a Son of Man, at whose pole God is working and speaking, who is in tune with God, and who has the competency to raise others to the level at which they may have some glimpse of God, is really a great blessing. In the first place, to have the man body is a great blessing, because it is the highest in all creation. And the highest aim of a man's life is to know God. To know God, we must know our own self first. Because it is the soul that has to know God. He cannot be known by the outgoing faculties, mind, or intellect. One student went to Ramakrishna Paramhansa, the well-known saint, the master of Swami Vivekananda. He had a book under his arm. Ramakrishna asked him, "What is it?" The student said, "Master, it is a book that tells how water is made." And smilingly, Ramakrishna said, "All right, squeeze the leaves of the book and see how many drops of water will come out of it." Do you see? This is only an example to show that the scriptures are worth tons of gold and emeralds, because they contain the experiences that the masters had in their life with God, and that creates an interest within us. But that is their scope, and there it ends. They cannot take us to the experience. That ends that portion of the reading. We had 91 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.